I think if we might make a start, and while I'm talking, a few more people can walk in. Hi, everybody. I'm Greg Martin. I'm chairing this session. And this is Going for Research Gold, the role and potential of research in the Institute and the profession. So if that's not what you were here for, you're in the wrong room. Please don't leave because we need the people. Now, the session, well, the purpose of the session is really to bring together a panel of researchers and practicing actuaries with an interest in experience in research, as well as the convener of the Research Council Committee, who's not actually here, but Trevor's going to sit in for Chris Latham, who is that convener, to discuss research in support of the profession from the various perspectives, which is what our panel is here to do. Particular subjects to be discussed include the ways practicing members can develop research interests and activities to good effect, and the benefits of doing so, and what research can offer to the average practitioner, and how practitioners can work with researchers as a ladder tackle various problems, etc. Now we have a distinguished panel which kept changing during the course of the last few days. So I've got four different pieces of paper now with bios on them, some very short. So I'll start at the left-hand side with Greg Taylor, has both academic and commercial experience. He was a full-time academic at Macquarie University for 8 years and has operated as a consulting actuary for about 30 years. He continues in that role currently and is simultaneously holds honorary professorships at both the University of Melbourne and the University of New South Wales. Very brief four lines there for Greg, very distinguished man. Ray, on the other hand, has 400 lines here. No, I'm joking. I'll just pick out the highlights. Ray works with Aon. He was previously Vice President Operations, Public Affairs and Reinsurance of the Florida Farm Bureau Insurance Companies in Gainesville, Florida. And he basically had a wide range of roles there. I said this, the bio goes on a little bit. Sorry, I don't mean that in any critical way. It's just trying to pick out some quick high points here. Responsible for the company's actuarial, strategic planning, underwriting, policy processing, training, public affairs and reinsurance functions. So a great background. And, you know, Ray's also got lots of experience in testifying before legislatures in Florida and all sorts of great stuff. So high level on Ray. We've got Pete next. Pete De Jong, who's a Professor of Actuarial Studies at Macquarie University and has been there since 2003. Prior to Macquarie, he was Professor at the University of British Columbia, Vancouver, and a reader at the London School of Economics. He has worked many consulting projects both in Australia, the US, Canada, and is visiting appointments in Europe, including Amsterdam, the UK and the USA. He works mainly in actuarial areas closely related to statistics and risk analysis, and he's authored over 40 articles in various journals. And immediately to my right, your left, is Trevor Thompson. You know him as the current president, but previously Trevor was also heavily instrumental in the research agenda for the Institute and coming up with the strategy, including the development of the Institute's research committee now. But so a little quick background. I think the structure is each of the panel members are going to do a very brief presentation, then some questions, which Trevor's going to chair, and then it'll be open for discussion, and that's my bit, so I get to sit down now. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg, for the welcome and introduction to the panel, and thank you, everybody, for attending this session. It's actually a privilege for me to have the opportunity to chair this. It's unfortunate Chris Latham can't be here, but as Greg said, I chaired the research task force of the Institute for what seemed about 18 months, and we put a huge amount of work into that, which culminated in many recommendations that were submitted to Council in May 2008 and were approved by Council. In the background, in the corner, I should introduce Ron Munane, who's sitting quietly. He's the Institute's research manager, who was a participant in that whole process and has a background very suited to supporting the sort of work that we undertook and, in fact, indeed, supporting the research agenda going forward. My role here is really to just set the scene in terms of how the Council and the Institute is actually thinking about research and why this is a priority for us, and I think that's a useful place to start, particularly given that you're interested in being here and hearing this discussion. The purpose of the panel following that is to hear a perspective from three senior people with very different backgrounds, and then the opportunity for us to discuss as a panel how realistic is it that we're searching for, what are the issues, and so on, to take this forward. So I guess the starting point from the perspective of Council is that there is a unanimous support for the notion that progressing relevant research is really absolutely fundamental to the long-term welfare of the profession. I mean, the fact is that our reputation and the skills we bring to bear are, in some respects, a paradigm, and the profession has been excellent at utilising that in fields that are traditional for us now, and we're respected for our presence in those fields, and indeed that's resulted in statutory roles. So that's very, very fundamental and powerful for the Institute and for the profession. But there's no guarantee that that's going to continue in perpetuity, and as new products get developed and other services and so on are provided in the community, and indeed as other professions or other academic qualifications encroach intentionally or otherwise on the areas that we have previously labelled our own and worked in. So it behoves us intellectually and commercially to actually look more widely as to the quality of the and the imagination and the intellectual proposition we're taking to our client and customer base to see that we're doing the very best job possible. So Council does endorse that as a starting proposition. The second leg is to say, how well are we doing that? Well, we spent a lot of effort on that question, and at the end of the day, to help answer that question constructively, we categorised research into three broad categories. One is what we'd call pure research, one is practical practitioner research, and the third is what we called high public profile research. And the reason we characterised it is in that way is that when people talk about research, and unless you differentiate it in that way, the nature of the research that we're talking about is very different, and the sort of people who are interested in doing it is different, and the audience in which that research is going to be used is being different. So by breaking it into those categories, it's enabled us to focus in on those quite different target areas and to determine what we think the priorities should be. Council, in fact, endorsed a presence in each of those areas, and I'll explain that briefly in a moment. The next high priority really was in relation to, are we doing research in the areas that we believe need to be done for the reasons outlined in why research is important? Because if we have a whole group of people enthusiastically charging away doing research on different things because they're interested in it, that's absolutely fine and we support it. But if we look from the sidelines and felt there were some serious gaps in terms of trying to reach the maintain the profession strategic presence in the community, then it's our responsibility as Council in part to do something about that. So just stepping back again, the three forms of research, pure research, I guess you'd all understand, is typically undertaken in universities, and indeed it's part of the role of academics to be heavily engaged in any event in research, and many of them are there because they enjoy it immensely. So we are very supportive of that. Practitioner research is the sort of research we see here, and it's anything from shared information on what people are doing through to some brave new ideas, but it's tricky in the area of practitioner research because in the modern world so much research of that nature is potentially commercial in confidence until employers who in some instances have funded it are actually willing to make it available. So it's very difficult to get a handle on just how much research is being done in that direction and with what effect. But clearly the bulk of our members are in practice, either as consultants or employees, and it's critical that they're actually out there producing more research. If we did all that research very successfully, both pure and practitioner, we could do a great job on that, but the public at large would never know anything about it. And yet part of the role of the profession is to be out there working with government and other people in areas that we have a legitimate interest and actually making a contribution to high-quality public debate on issues of relevance to our profession. And that's what we've categorised as high public policy research. That's typically not in the field of pure research, but the fact is that it's very meaningful, and our ability to coherently put together objective analyses of situations that impact policy is something that the Institute has also supported us doing. So just finally, what are we doing about all that? There's a program that under Ron's coordination, which has been developed by the Research Council Committee along the lines of the recommendations that were put forward. But the primary things there really are to firstly include a incorporated process whereby at least once a year people, representative stakeholders in the Institute would get together and determine the fields of priority research for the next 12 months or 2 years, and to try and identify any gaps, and that would span across the area of the areas that I've spoken about. And that process is getting underway formally from June of this year. And I think that's going to be quite exciting, and it might be quite revealing. The second point is to say that to support this, Council has actually been willing to put some money up, and indeed there's going to be a research fund established, and that research fund will go towards providing financial support in some instances to approved research under a grant or a project sense, or indeed providing some things such as PhD scholarships. So there's some tangible arrangements around there. There's a specific initiative to support research through the practice areas, and each of the practice committees now have research subcommittees, and indeed they're being supported in that and encouraged to actually liaise with our international colleagues, because clearly, as we've heard so many times, as the community becomes global, it's it would be naive and inappropriate to be duplicating here something that was being done elsewhere, or why wouldn't we work in collaboration? So indeed we're working with the Society of Actuaries and CAS and the UK in terms of the researcher agenda and content. So there's some high-level initiatives that are being taken. It's a journey we've got to go on. The final thing that's really a challenge is how do we bridge a fairly significant chasm between pure research, which some practitioners feel is remote from their world, and practitioner research, which some pure researchers feel is not really research. So the question is, how do we make all that come together? And there's a number of initiatives around that as well at a practical level, and certainly there's some dialogue underway. So that's really the background to where the Institute and Council want to take research. It's a program, it's a journey, but we're committed to it. And that's a small summary to get started, so I'd like to now invite, according to my list here, Greg, if you'd like to go next. Greg Taylor.
Thanks, Greg. You see the title... a few reflections of a research aware practitioner. This is the characterisation that was given to my slot on the panel. So that's their name for me. It's not necessarily my own. The question posed was the one there. Suggest ways practising members can develop research interests and activities to good effect, and the benefits of doing so. Now, there are actually two separate questions there, and in the small number of minutes that I have, I don't think I've got time to talk about both, so I'll focus on the first of the questions, which I've shown there in red. Now, here you see my attempt to begin discussing this, and perhaps I could just sit down now because Trevor seems to have said everything I was going to say. But I did begin by in facing the question of how the Institute and its members could approach research by classifying research into its different categories, and I've actually come up with four. So the first is the pure or theoretical research. There's applied research, empirical and survey research. Now, rather than just leave it as a bunch of phrases like that, I'd just give a little bit of detail as to what I mean. Pure or theoretical research is characterised by the introduction of novel concepts or techniques. So it's fundamental research. There are plenty of examples that could be produced. I've just picked out the Black-Scholes pricing formula, which was really, if you look back at 1973, I think it was introduced, and you looked at the way options were being priced then, the Black-Scholes formula was a complete break with the past, and it spawned a whole industry. So that's a good example of fundamental research. It has the properties of doing something completely new and commencing a whole new branch of inquiry and indeed industry. Applied research can also involve innovation, but in the way I use the phrase, it involves the application of existing concepts or techniques from a foreign discipline to our own discipline. So it's not path-breaking in the sense of inventing something completely new, but it can be path-breaking in making a new application within our own field of endeavour. The third category of empirical research consists of the application of well-established concepts or techniques to specific data sets to derive novel results. So here, nothing new is being introduced at all. I mean, there's nothing new. It's not even new to our profession, but it's a new application of something. And the Wilkie econometric model is a good example of that. The Wilkie model uses time-honoured time series techniques, but it produced a model that was useful for the actual application of it originally was in valuing maturity guarantee options in life insurance, and that hadn't been done in any thorough manner previously. And finally, survey research, which consists of examining the literature that is generally unfamiliar to members and producing a summary of it that assembles previously unfamiliar knowledge in a convenient way. So my example there is a paper on copulas, which are becoming more known now in the profession, but if you go back just a few years, they were almost totally unknown. So now going back to these four categories of research, how should we respond to these? We need to look at how these different types of research affect the approach that might be taken to them. So what I would suggest is that as we go from the bottom of that list working upwards towards the top, we require increases in the following things: breadth of education, commitment of time and purpose, analytical depth, and familiarity with the associated literature. All of those things will need to be increased as you go from bottom to top in that list. And it follows from that the demands of the higher members of that list are very much greater than those of the lower members on the list. That's not to trivialise or belittle items 3 and 4 on the list. They're very useful. But in terms of planning, you need to be prepared to apply much greater resources and funding to items 1 and 2 than to 3 and 4. And the other thing that I'd point out, and this is something that's essential to recognise ahead of time is that the more you go towards the pure end of the research, the greater is the distance to the horizon of its application. In fact, one might even say that good fundamental research is, by its nature, some way ahead of its time. It might be maligned, actually, at the time of its production, but 10 or 20 years later found to be of great value. This obviously creates a great difficulty in planning research. There's also, as you work upwards through the list, increasing reliance on individual inspiration. You can't direct pure research very well. You can't go and tell an individual, go away and produce something that's path-breaking in this field. That just doesn't happen usually. And also, as you go towards the pure end of the spectrum, there's decreasing certainty of outcome. There may be time spent, it might be spent conscientiously, but there just isn't, at the end, an outcome that's of great use. And that's unfortunate, but it's what happens. I don't think you can change that. So you may as well recognise that it happens. And there's decreasing scope for direction. I already mentioned that. So, suggesting ways that practicing members can develop research interests and activities to good effect, I'd suggest that as you work from the applied towards the pure end of the spectrum, I've got my arrow the wrong way there. The arrow should be going down. As you go from pure towards applied, there's increasing suitability for group activity, and there's increasing scope for direction by the Institute. I'm just about on time. Just to finish, just let me pick up one point that arose out of Trevor's address, which was the mention that the Institute will be focusing its research efforts. It will be choosing research areas for the focus of its efforts. I don't want to speak against that in any way at all, but I do want to say that this is a very tricky area, and it's tricky because it goes back to the points that are being made here about fundamental research involving a reliance on individual inspiration, decreasing certainties of outcome, and so on. If the wider you define the areas in which you allow research to take place, the greater the chance that you will actually achieve something fundamental. The narrower you make them, if you define very closely what you want an individual to do, then that leaves that individual very little scope to make discovery. But at the same time, by narrowing the scope of the research, you increase the certainty of the outcome. So this is a very fine balance here that you have to weigh. You have to, in choosing the research areas, you have to define them sufficiently narrowly that you're going to get something that you want, or sufficiently widely that you're going to allow flexibility for the individuals carrying out the research. And you know, just how you make that choice depends on how you weight the two alternative outcomes. Well, that's my time, so I'll sit down and I'll leave the lectern to the next speaker. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, Greg. Peter, I think you're next.
I'm obviously not Leonie Tickle. She couldn't be here today through no fault of her own. And I'm a substitute. There are a number of things that I am already taking issue with here. We've I start off from a number of propositions. First of all, no research, no profession. Okay? Secondly, okay, so research is essential. Secondly, all professionals should have some research interest. I don't think you can be a professional without, you know, involving yourself in some sense in research or interest in research. The third proposition I like to make, and this is where I'm starting to take a bit of issue with perhaps some of the things that are being said here. Research is a continuum. And, you know, you might try and think of it in terms of pure and public interest and applied, but in reality, it's a continuum. Maybe not even on one dimension. What you need is people all along that continuum. Because if you have a bunch of people in applied research and a bunch of people in pure research and nothing in the middle, there's going to be problems of communication. You won't be able to talk. The people at the one end will not be able to effectively communicate to people at the other end. So I think the ideal is where there's a continuum, where there's people all along the spectrum. So I'm a little, I know for some purposes it's convenient to characterize different types of research, but in my view, it is really one of, you know, there are extremes there, but it is very, very important to get people all along that chain. Because that's how you get conversations going about what is important and what can be done and what is useful. You know, there's a sort of a filtration going along all along that chain. Now, some of the things that Greg mentioned, right? Pure research tends to be less certain in its outcomes than applied, and so on. But if you have people along that spectrum, then those decisions are not being made by one person. There's a sort of a conversation going on between all the people right through the spectrum, which provides some perspective to what is currently viewed as important or what ought to be viewed as important. That's part of a discussion that needs to take place on a continual basis. Now, in the actuarial profession, and I'm a bit of an outsider, for reasons I'll explain in a minute, you know, there's a lot of people at one end of the spectrum, if you will, right? And there's relatively few people, Greg, of course, is a great exception, at the other end, right? And that makes that whole balance rather unbalanced, okay? And that's a very undesirable situation. Part of that undesirable situation is that we have great students coming, you know, recruiting into the system, but they're, most of them are getting funneled out at that one end, right? And very few are being funneled across the spectrum. Now, I don't know exactly how you address that issue, but one of them is, of course, to improve or send the signals to students that there are a range of careers available, not just becoming a fellow and that's it. If you don't have that spectrum, that continuum, then people at one end, the pure research end, will get disillusioned. They'll drift off. I'm a drifter. I drifted off. You know, 30 years ago, I was interested in actuarial things, and I hardly had anybody to talk to, so I went into statistics. I drifted off. And the same will be happening with good students. I see it at Macquarie. They drift off, okay, and they're lost to the profession unless they see a substantial continuum of people right along the spectrum. Now, I've just spoken of, one continuum. Of course, there's many other continuums here. Now I'll get into Leone's. So what are some of the benefits, right? Now, let's also keep in mind that the constraints on people working at different ends of the spectrum are quite different. In our department, if we don't publish in certain ranked journals, we're going to suffer. Okay, these are the constraints. Now, I don't agree exactly with all these rankings and all that, but there are journals which are better, there are journals which are worse, etc., and we have to publish in them. Okay? You know, we have time to do research. It's what we're paid to do, a third of our time at least, or 40%. We are somewhat disconnected from practical problems. I'd love to see practical problems, okay? And I'd love to work on practical problems. But unless there's a conversation, then it's not going to happen. We have great students who need to be funneled up into that mindset. We do not have commercial imperatives. I have, you know, one of the beefs I always have is, you know, I'm a sort of a quantitative guy. I need data. People don't give it to me. Why not? Because there's commercial issues, etc. Well, I can't do the kind of research that a lot of people would like to see coming out of universities if people never give me any data and only give me dummy data sets to work on. Practitioners at the other end of the spectrum, you know, you understand the problems. You know what the issues are. You know, I've walked into rooms with people, and I'm coming from a very theoretical perspective, and they're coming from a very applied, and it takes a long time to communicate. Why? Because there's relatively few people in that chain. Okay, but I would urge everybody to, you know, partake somewhere on that spectrum. Look, there's some great initiatives, as Leonie has pointed out here. You know, we need data. We need practical problems. There are, you know, the government is getting increasingly interested in linkage kind of proposals. So, you know, I'm a supporter of that. Not completely, but certainly for some of it to, you know, get people together in the same room. You know, I'm all in favor of working with working with people, and I really, you know, as coming somewhat of an outsider, I notice that there is relatively little interaction, or, you know, not enough interaction all along that spectrum. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, thanks, Pete. And now Wade, please.
Okay. I'm going to talk about, in the words of Barack Obama, yes, we can. If you ask the question, can somebody who holds enough roles and things to fill up a CV Greg can't follow, can manage to publish two or three papers per decade in the peer-reviewed academic journal, any of you can certainly do it. I've tried to be a hybrid actuarial person who's worked in public policy work and has also worked with a lot of great academic researchers. And I've got a very short set of examples of success stories, of things that have actually happened that I think have changed things by actuaries cooperating with academics and with public policymakers, et cetera, to change things. A couple of quick points. Everybody's a researcher. You know, we can do things in our daily life like build better spreadsheets, or I can find ways to explain to my wife why I don't come home three nights a week and I've got to go out with a client again. And there's a lot of research that goes into explaining to her how that happens without getting in a lot of trouble or copping it, as you folks would say. There's internal research that goes on all the time in companies about processes and things that are usually held with IP by your employer. There's academic research and there's public policy research. Let's not forget about all the research that theoretically people like Kevin Rudd and Barack Obama do before they make a decision on things that affect our world. There's steps in research. I have, you know, basically a couple of points to add to what's already been said. One thing I'd note is that you've got to find people to collaborate with, especially if you're a practitioner. You're not going to be able to do it on your own. If you're working day-to-day in a day job where you've got a lot of responsibility to generate revenue or something as a consultant, you're going to have to find people to work with. Also, you got to have good peer review. You've got to have people looking at your work and challenging it and making sure it's right. And then you've got to have a way to communicate that. You've got to find a way to get the work you've done and get it out there so people can act on it. This is one of my research projects. I worked with some people at various universities in the U.S., and the little post-it notes were put on by my staff after Katrina. And I regret that the editor of the journal changed the track of the hurricane, that I had written this article in 1997 predicting that there could be a hurricane that was going to cause $100 billion of insured damage in the U.S. by hitting Florida and then going into Louisiana. And, of course, we all know that was Katrina. And we actually did a lot of research in the U.S. proving that this was a problem. And while, yes, the dikes or the levees failed, and yes, New Orleans went underwater, there were a lot of steps taken to prepare for these things that made the consequences less bad. In fact, one of the things that came out of the earlier research was a U.S. government exercise called Hurricane Pam, where in 2004 they gave George Bush a report that actually said that there would be a hurricane that would come up into New Orleans, breach the levees, 1 million people would be evacuated, and 600,000 buildings would be damaged. Little did we know. And I actually gave a presentation to the CAS rate-making seminar in New Orleans in 2005 where I had those slides up there, and I said, at some point in our lifetimes, this spot we're sitting in right now will be underwater. And indeed, it was 4 months later. Not that I'm good, but it was really just a case of a matter of time. And don't worry, today I'm not going to suggest there's going to be anything happen to Sydney, so don't worry. I moved here. I live here now. It's a cool place. I got away from all that when I left the old country. Some things, though, that have led to some success. We've did a lot of work in the U.S. with some colleagues of mine in the insurance industry on frequency, you know, talking about how can you handle not only the PML, but the sideways accumulation of natural disaster losses, and how can you fund things like bushfires and floods and, you know, an accumulation of losses. Don't have time to talk about it now, but we acted on that. Also, back in 1998, I worked with a guy named Dave Chernick in a research group called IBHS, which is the Institute for Business and Home Safety in the U.S., and several committees of the Casualty Actuarial Society to come up with a way to solve a problem. We knew that there was a problem that the consumer was not acting to pay money for a house that was well built, right? Because our problem was big hurricanes, people building too many houses that were badly constructed. Nobody was paying any money for mitigation. What do you do? Well, we went to Sears, which is like your Harvey Norman. We looked at a refrigerator, and we said, gee, you know, there's all these yellow stickers on there that says if you buy this refrigerator, there's this much energy usage. And we developed something similar and implemented it for houses in the U.S. for mitigation, and it had a lot of good effects. So, in summary, research is part of everyday life based on principles of finding problems, working with co-researchers, getting peer review and communication. It's usually a long process, but it is possible to do it with your day job, and yes, I hear them. And it's very important to our profession. And that's me if you want to contact me and do this. But I just really wanted to make the point in this, and I'm sorry I had to kind of rush through it, but that, you know, there are a lot of good examples, especially from the CAS and the Academy of Actuaries in the States, where we have